This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 2 years after the invasion of Iraq, images of women in uniform kissing their children goodbye and heading off to war with M16 rifles on their shoulders are no longer so unusual. America's military operation depends on women as it never has before. Currently, 350,000 women serve in the U.S. military. One in seven service members in Iraq is a woman, and those numbers are only expected to grow. And while the military adjusts to a mixed-gender battlefield, there are issues on the home front. This is America's first war where a significant number of mothers in uniform have been deployed for long periods of time. Women have served in every military conflict in American history. This time, though, we seem to have reached a turning point. Though still officially barred from ground combat, women can command military police companies, fly jets and attack helicopters, and much more. As of the beginning of this month, 35 female soldiers have been killed in action, 261 have been wounded. Later in the program, Tom Daschle joins us to talk about his old job as the Democratic leader in the U.S. Senate and his new one as a Washington lobbyist. But first, women in the military and the war in Iraq. If you've been there, or if your mom or sister or daughter or wife is, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now by phone from the Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio, Texas, is Sergeant Connie Spinks, who's recuperating from serious injuries caused by a suicide bomber in Iraq. And it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be with you.
How far into your deployment were you wounded?
Actually, I had only been over in Mosul, Iraq for 5 weeks.
5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
What was your experience like there before the incident?
Actually, you know, we were doing a really wonderful job because my job or MOS in the military is civil affairs. So we get to work with the civilians and we have direct contact with the populace. And so one of the things that we had done, we had started reconstruction projects. We were actually, you know, interacting with some government officials and we was helping to, regain the economics and the economy over in Iraq. So the experience that I had before I left, got injured, I should say, was a really good one because I worked with some really good, decent Iraqis who were, sacrificing and willing their lives every day to cross lines to work with U.S. troops.
And the city of Mosul, where you were, that's really been a flashpoint.
It has.
How did your injury happen?
Well, what had happened was we was on a convoy, and my particular position that day was the SAW gunner. So I was operating the machine gun atop of the Humvee, and it was an up-armored Humvee. And so we were out, and we had went to the Nineveh Ruins, which is what we're going to reconstruct and turn it into a marketplace with one of the teams that we was working with there. And, we had took some measurements, some pictures, and done some things. And we was returning from that, that site when we was on, we was on our way back to the camp, and a vehicle was coming from the off-ramp. And as a SAW gunner, you're not allowed to let anyone come between your vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told the vehicle, I positioned my weapon directly at the vehicle, and I told them in Arabic to stop. I was like, Olgaf. And then I was like, Olgaf Tadarami, which is stop or I'm going to shoot. And the vehicle did not listen to me. It actually sped up. And as soon as it sped up and hit our vehicle, it exploded. So it ended up being a suicide bomber, and I got ejected from the turret. I got injured. Two other people that were in the vehicle passed away instantly upon impact, and two others were sent to Fort Bragg for their injuries as well.
I wonder, SAW, by the way, Squad Automatic Weapon, that's what it stands for. Yes, you said it's a machine gun. I wonder, there was a finding put out by the government lately that talked about decreasing numbers of women enlisting in the military for fear of exactly what happened to you. What would you tell them?
I would tell them that, you have to make your own choice in life, but the choices that you make, they're going to have an impact not only on you, but on others as well, as far as your family, your friends, the entire country as a whole. And so you need to do what's best for yourself and for the nation as well. I guess a lot of females are scared because of the fact that you do have to leave your loved ones for long periods of time. Like, my tour was supposed to be for a year, 12 months, with the possibility of extending. And actually, you know, I've been speaking with people, you know, who are still over in Iraq with my unit, and that may possibly happen, you know? And so they're not happy about the fact, but we all have a purpose in life, and sometimes you have to do things and make sacrifices to better, you know, to better the future.
As we mentioned, there's still a prohibition on women in ground combat. You're on a convoy in Iraq acting as the SAW gunner, the machine gunner at the top of a Humvee. This line seems awfully blurry.
And it is. You know, it is definitely a blurry line. It's no black and white by no means at all, because you don't know where the battlefield is. Anywhere can be the battlefield. We get attacked on base, on the camp. We get attacked when we go out, you know? So it's not like one specific area is, you know, the battle zone or the battlefield. So you're at constant danger, and that's the thing. No matter where you are, no matter how small or trivial you think your position or your job is, and then there's always danger. There's a possibility of danger.
Were you treated differently as a woman while you were in Iraq?
By the Iraqis, I was, but by, you know, the rest of the military that I worked with, as far as, like, you know, the different branches, I was not.
What about since you've come home?
Since I've come home, and then people, they try to sort of baby me, if I could say, because I am a female and I did get injured, but I try to explain to everyone that I can do anything that a male can do, and I don't want to be treated any differently, you know? I'm not a weakling, you know, I have been injured, and that has changed things a little bit, but, you know, I'm trying to prove myself, you know? I'm trying to prove myself that I don't need special treatment.
Do you know yet if your injuries are going to force your departure from the military, or if you're going back?
They haven't determined it yet because of the fact that I have two surgeries. I have one surgery next month, and then I have a surgery in May. And they want to do a surgery on my leg, but they have to wait 6 months to a year before they can do that one. Hmm. And so, you know, depending on my physical therapy, my recovery, and just the overall healing is when they're going to be able to determine if I'm going to be able to go back to duty and be fit for duty.
Connie Spinks, good luck to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sergeant Connie Spinks of the United States Army joined us by phone from the Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio, Texas. You can find more about Sergeant Spinks' story and those of other wounded female soldiers on our webpage at www.npr.org. Also, we're talking today about women and the war in Iraq. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. To give us a wider picture of women in the military and the impact on family life at home, joining us now here in Studio 3A is Joyce Razor, Director of the Government Relations at the National Military Family Association. Thanks very much for coming in today.
You're welcome.
How is this war different from previous conflicts for female service members?
I think you've already touched on several of those issues. Number one, we have more soldiers, service members who are women, and they are in so many occupations in the military. They are a part of the military, so they deploy when the military deploys, and they are very professional. They take their jobs, as Connie obviously indicated, they're professional. They take their job seriously. They're also deploying for longer times. And a lot of them are mothers, and they are deploying for a long time away from their family, and that's a change.
Mm-hmm. And as we heard her story, one of the things that's clearly different is the roles that women
yes.
are taking.
Yes, they are. They're in just about every occupation in the military. There are a few combat jobs closed, but in this conflict, we see there. No one is immune from the dangers. Even if your job isn't designated as a combat job, it can still pose some risks.
Mm-hmm. Do women tend to sign up for the military for the same reasons that men do?
Yes, I think a lot of them do. They look at the benefit package, either education benefits. They look at benefits for their families, health care, housing allowances, that military community. They view that as a good place for their children to
mm-hmm.
be. And they also look at the professionalism. This is a place where women can do significant jobs on behalf of their country.
And do they tend to sign up for the regular forces or National Guard and Reserves?
They're in both in about the same percentages, actually.
And in about the same percentages as men?
No, they're about 15% of the force is women.
No, well, never mind. My arithmetic is going to get me into trouble sooner or later. Let's not go there. And is the military adapting successfully to the greatly increased numbers of women?
I think in a lot of ways they are. They are looking for ways to support women in keeping in touch with their family when they're deployed. This is something that men in the military have noticed as well. They are trying in the family readiness process back at the installation, they are trying to include male spouses to provide that family support. So I think they're looking at ways to support the whole family.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation if you'd like to join us. 800-989-8255 and email us totn@npr.org. John is on the line with us from Tifton, Georgia.
Hi. I'm a retired Army officer, and my wife is currently an Army officer in Germany right now. She just returned from Kuwait and Iraq back in November.
And two Army officers in the same family. Obviously, you have a great deal of insight into what she's going through.
Yes, I was also deployed, thankfully not at the same time that she was, but I have done my turn into the deployment in 2003.
And what are the strains like on your family life?
Well, we have two sons that are in the 7th and the 8th grade, and obviously they feel the strain of having any parent being gone. I think it's a little tougher on them with their mom being deployed, maybe that dad was supposed to be gone or that they were sort of used to him being gone. But when she went out the door, I think that was a little bit different on them. Mm-hmm. But I think they've handled it quite well, and they seem to understand the sacrifices that are necessary, and that this was part of the job that we signed up to do.
We just have a few seconds left before we have to go to a break, but is it easier because there's email contact? You can be in frequent contact?
Oh, I think it's definitely easier. I was in the Gulf War in Desert Storm, and we only had to rely on letters and occasionally a phone call, but now we can trade emails, and we do have the use of cell phones. So I think that has also eased the burden on the kids as well.
John, we wish you and your family the best of luck.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We're talking about the women who've served and are serving in Iraq. 800-989-8255. More after the break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Thursday on the program, we're going to turn to you to help us tell the stories of war on the home front. We're looking for personal stories like the small North Carolina company whose tearaway windshield film technology went from NASCAR to Black Hawk helicopters, or the Forest Service in Montana, which may soon face a bad fire season without the National Guard there to help fight it. If there's a story like that in your community, please tell us in an email, send it to totn@npr.org, put war at home in the subject line. Again, the email address, totn@npr.org, war at home in the subject line. Today we're talking about women who've served in the Iraq War and the specific issues they have to deal with on the battlefield and at home. You're invited to join the discussion. Our number, 800-989-8255, and the email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Joyce Razor of the National Military Family Association. She's with us here in Studio 3A. And let's get another caller on the line, and we'll go to Mark. Mark's calling from St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah, Neil, thanks for taking my call. My daughter's getting ready to go to Iraq in August, but I guess I wanted to enlighten some people in reference to the expenditure she's had to incur prior to going. Mainly, her basic training, which was, I believe, 3 months, she had to buy all her cleaning supplies. She had spent over $900, as the other recruits had to, on brooms, scrub brushes, all cleaning material, which I found appalling that people of that are going to serve our nation are having to expend money on items like this. Mm-hmm. I just find it very disturbing, and I wondered if somebody out there couldn't hear that and address that.
Okay. Joyce Razor, I don't know if you know anything about this issue.
Well, there are costs that military families do incur every time they move to a new installation, and I think some of that, your daughter went to some training and got to a location that she needed basic cleaning supplies. And families often talk about those extra hidden costs of service, and certainly moving and buying those kind of things, sometimes when you've had to leave them behind at an old location, is a problem.
I'm sorry, it was during her basic training.
Oh.
She had to spend $900, as well as many of the other recruits. So basically, they walked out of there with half their pay after they had to buy, you know, cleaning, you know, like brooms and brushes and things that the military, I think, should have provided. It was very unfortunate that she spent 3 months of her time and spent basically over half her income on just, you know, and I think that there's a lot of hidden cost out there that I find very unfortunate that these soldiers are having to expend their money on very little of which they have.
Well, Joyce Razor is taking notes on this, and maybe she'll look into it after the program. Mm-hmm. So we may get a response for you, Mark. I just wanted to ask you before we let you go, what was your response when you learned your daughter was signing up?
Well, I tried to forewarn her. Actually, I have two kids, and she was the one that I didn't really expect. You know, I've already advised her, you know, there's other things to do. And the recruiters had approached her at her grocery store job and made things look nice. And actually, she didn't think she'd be going to Iraq come this August so soon. She's only been in for like 5 months. And she's kind of taken back. She thought she would be able to be in the forces. But anyway, I kind of had told her that's what would happen. But I was taken back. I'm disappointed in a way, but yet proud. And that's the only way you can be. I mean, it's a hell of a responsibility for her to take on, and the only thing I can do now is support her. Once she made the commitment, I could do nothing other than that.
Okay, Mark, we wish her the best of luck.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Joining us now is Sergeant Shannon Alvarez, a member of the California National Guard who served in Iraq for over a year, while her husband and young daughter remained at home. She joins us now from the studios of member station KALW in San Francisco, and thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Why did you sign up for the National Guard?
For school.
School?
Yes.
For the benefits, basically the GI Bill.
Yes, the GI Bill.
Mm-hmm. And were you, when you signed up, when was that?
It was just after the Gulf War, actually a couple of years after, in 1994.
So at the time, you had no idea that you were going to end up spending a year in Iraq?
No, not at all.
Did that come as a surprise?
Yes, because I was actually active duty for a couple of years, and once I had my daughter, I decided to join the National Guard. And so I thought that that would be, I could spend more time with my daughter and less time with the military.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do in the military?
I'm a supply specialist.
Supply specialist, right. Now, yes. You signed up, moved into the National Guard in hopes of spending more time with your daughter, and then got a year in Iraq.
Yes.
So how did that work out?
It was really hard. Having to, you know, tell my daughter that, you know, I would be away. At first, it was for 6 months, and it was even harder to have to tell her that I was extended. So it was really hard.
How old is she?
She's now 8.
Now 8. A little difficult to explain.
Yes.
And it must have been hard on your husband as well.
Yes. It was hard, but I have to give it to my husband. He did a very good job of taking care of our daughter. But, you know, I'm the mom. I'm supposed to be there for her always. So.
Yeah. So you must have thought about it every day.
Every day. Every day.
Did the men who are fathers in your unit, did they go through similar things, do you think?
Well, I think it's different for men. Not to say that men don't love their children and care about their children, but I think moms have a stronger bond, a stronger relationship. Moms, we know everything there is to know about our kids. We're you know, supposed to be there to comfort them. And I think men, their love is shown differently. Hmm. And that's not to take away from, you know, how they feel about their kids, but I just think it's a different relationship.
Let's get a caller on the line, and this is Connor. Connor's calling from Durham, North Carolina.
Hello, this is actually Hannah, not Connor.
I apologize. I just read what's typed there.
That's fine. This is an interesting interesting subject to me because I'm a law student right now, and I have two small children. I've actually considered joining the Army after I was done with law school. But I guess my question is what the effect is on small children. I have two children who will be 7 and 9 when I graduate, and the real possibility of me being gone for a long period of time, I'm not even sure it's worth considering. Ironically, though, the sort of civilian life of a lawyer is not always friendly to children either.
Yeah, 80-hour weeks and that sort of thing.
Right. So I was just wondering from a perspective of somebody who has been away from their children.
Well, Shannon Alvarez.
Right.
What can you tell this JAG to be?
I mean, I know that you for whatever reason you would like to join the military, but I wouldn't suggest it. I would never want to leave my daughter again for that long of a period. I think it affected her having me gone. And once I got back, we went through so many emotional things that it was hard. It took a while for me to pick up where I left off.
I don't mean to intrude, but could you give us an example?
My daughter was happy to see me, but I think I somehow lost my role. It's almost like I had to go back and say, okay, you know, I'm mom and I'm back now and we need to get our relationship back to how it was. I was gone for over a year. So she knew that I was her mom, obviously, but the relationship just wasn't the same.
Yeah, a year's like forever for 6-7-year-old.
For kids. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, Connor, excuse me, you're not Connor. I apologize. I'm reading the name again. Does that affect the way you might think about this?
Yeah, it does, definitely. It's not that I haven't considered this before, but it's interesting to hear from someone who's gone through it from a mother's perspective, because I've only heard from fathers. I think it is different. So definitely something to consider.
Well, thanks very much for the phone call. Joyce Razor, as you were listening to Shannon Alvarez there, you were nodding your head. Her experience, have a lot of people gone through that?
Yes, they have. And, you know, you look at surveys on married couples in the United States where both spouses work, and you see that the mom is still the manager of the household and expected to do certain things, even though dads may help more and become more involved. And that's true for military families as well. The mom, as Shannon talked about, she's the one who felt like she needed to know everything and handle everything. And so we have moms who are deployed, who are, you know, getting emails with the children's report cards or corresponding with children's teachers and, you know, thinking, well, if I had been there to unload the backpack, the homework would have gotten turned in. Trying to manage healthcare appointments when the baby's sick. So the military moms are trying to maintain that mom role from a distance. The communication helps, but there is still some of the guilt and some of the feelings that Shannon talked about. I think the caller who asked about what is the effect on small children, this is an issue that is very interesting to the Department of Defense. They're trying to study the effects of these deployments in these situations on service members, and to look at what's happening with families. Families tell us the stress level is higher for children. And every family, regardless of whether it's mom or dad who's deployed, or in some cases both who are deployed, there is that readjustment period when the parents come back. As the children have grown up, parents have to remember that the children have grown up in that year. There's a period of readjustment for families, and some families have some difficulty with it.
Mm-hmm. You're still in the National Guard, Shannon?
Yes, I am.
And so there's another possibility, I guess, that you could get sent back to Iraq.
Yes, it is possible, yeah.
And how do you look forward to that?
Well, I don't look forward to it, actually. I have a short period of time left in my enlistment, a little over a year, so I'm really going to have to get with my family and think about if re-listening is the best thing for me to do. it was really hard leaving my daughter, and so it's something that I'm going to have to strongly consider.
Did you have a job before you left?
Yes.
Did you find that job there for you when you got back?
Yes.
Well, there's a plus.
Yes.
And finally, as you look at this issue, as we look ahead now with the numbers of women in the military now and that number, again, likely to increase, if you would identify one problem, would it be support for families who are in situations like yours?
Yes. I would think if you would have, I know it's almost impossible to have a definite timeline to know when you're going and when you're coming back, but I feel like that's really important, especially when you have kids. Kids need to know that they need some type of time frame. And that was the worst thing for me, is having to call my family and tell my daughter that I wouldn't be home when she expected me to be home. So if parents just knew actually when they were going to be gone and for how long, I think that would really, really help.
Shannon Alvarez, good luck to you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Shannon Alvarez is a sergeant in the California National Guard and spoke to us from the studios of member station KALW in San Francisco. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Christina is with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I'm a Gulf War veteran, and fortunately I did not have children when I was in the service. I didn't have my daughter till after I came home, but both my husband and I were in the Gulf War, as well as my brother,
mm-hmm.
although we were in different units. And I think one thing to keep in mind is that while I sympathize certainly with people who have to be separated from their children, my brother is now separated from his wife and daughter. He's in Kuwait. It is a volunteer service. And when you go in with the expectation that, yes, you're going to have to be separated from your family. And as they will tell you in basic training, every soldier is in the infantry. That's your primary MOS, is 11 Bravo. And you have to be prepared that you might have to shoot that weapon and that you might be in danger. That's just part of the volunteer enlistment process. And if you can't accept that, then you probably shouldn't volunteer to go in.
Mm-hmm. Joyce, that seems self-evident that if you join the military, A, you've got to expect every once in a while there might be a war and you're going to have to serve.
Yes, exactly. And this is an all-volunteer force, and every member in it knows that they need to serve. I think, however, Shannon brought up a very important point, especially for the Guard and Reserve, which was deployments of this length were different and beyond the expectation for the Guard and Reserve. And a lot of families have had more difficulties because of the extensions that have come up. People have considered they were going to deploy for a certain length of time and then be home. Situations changed and they had to stay longer. That has been very, very hard for families. It used to be most deployments, you could put up a calendar and you could circle the date on the calendar when mommy or daddy were going to come home. Families have not been able to do that in this war, and that has made different issues and things a lot harder for a lot of those folks.
And Christina, I know you didn't have a date certain when you were coming home from the Gulf War, but as it turned out, it was a relatively short deployment. So
yes, I was there for 7 months.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the phone call. Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Before we let the subject go, Joyce Razor, have the services done more to improve their support for women who are sent overseas, support for families in general?
Oh, yes, definitely. We're light years away ahead of where we were in terms of family support. In the Vietnam War, for example, a lot of the lessons learned from the Gulf War have gone to make, and deployments since then have gone to make things better. It's an ongoing process. Every new deployment brings new issues. The pace of deployment has necessitated other changes. We're just hoping that the support continues. So people are more aware of the family issues. This is a married force. Over half of the military has family responsibilities. In order to retain that quality force, you have to deal with family issues.
Joyce Razor, thanks very much. We appreciate you coming in to speak with us today.
You're welcome.
Joyce Razor is Director of Government Relations at the National Military Family Association and joined us here in Studio 3A. When we come back from a short break, the former Democratic Senate leader Tom Daschle will join us to take your calls about the future of the party and life after Congress. Who knew there was one? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us questions by email, totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.